Networking and Health Information Exchange, Unit 9B, Privacy, Confidentiality, and Security Issues and Standards. Access control is who or what is allowed access to a particular resource and what level of access they are allowed. For example, which users can have access to a patient record? A doctor may have access to all of the information, including contact information, medical history, and medication. The doctor would probably be allowed to read the information and make changes to it. A receptionist would have access to the patient's contact information, but nothing else. Access control involves three steps: identification, authentication, and authorization. Identification requires that a user presents identification, like a username. Once the identification has been provided, the system must authenticate the user. This makes sure that the identification is true and has not been forged. Authentication is something you know, something you have, or something you are. A password would be an example of authentication. Authorization is the process of allowing the user to perform the actions that they have permission to do. For example, being able to read a file. There are a couple of things to keep in mind as you are providing access to users. The first is separation of duties. No one person should have access to perform an action that could lead to fraudulent activity. For example, there should be multiple people involved in the payroll process. There should be an individual that verifies an employee's hours, another issues the paycheck, and a third that would sign the check. If only one individual was involved in the process, we could have a person paid for hours that they didn't work. Another best practice is to only give users the access they need to perform their job. This is called least privilege. While it is easy for the system administrator to allow everyone to do everything on a system and assume that they would not do anything that they shouldn't do, this isn't the case. Do you know the saying, give them an inch and they will take a mile? Users will do things they shouldn't, either intentionally or unintentionally, so we will only give them access to do the things that they should be doing. There are three primary models for access control. Discretionary access control, DAC, means that it is completely up to the owner of the objects who has access to them and what access they have. For example, if I create a file, I can decide who has access to it and what permissions or rights they have. Read, write, delete, etc. It is up to the discretion of the owner or administrator of a system who has access to what. With mandatory access control, MAC, an owner or administrator cannot decide who has what access. Access is controlled by a numeric access level. This is used in the military. For example, if a document is classified as top secret, only those users with clearance to top secret documents will be able to access the document. Even if the creator of the document or an administrator thinks that someone without top secret clearance should have access to that document, they cannot. Role-based access control, RBAC, is access based on the role a person plays in an organization. Access is given to a particular role inside of an organization, and then users are associated with those roles. They inherit the access from that role. For example, we might create a role of receptionist in a medical practice. We would figure out what access to what resources a receptionist needs and assigns that access to the role. Then we would associate all of our receptionists with that role, and they would now have all of the access that we gave that role. If a receptionist leaves the practice, we simply disassociate her user account with the role, and she now has no access. There are two types of access control, logical and physical. Logical access control is managing access to data files, programs, and networks. Methods for controlling logical access include access control list, ACLs, account restrictions, and authentication methods. Physical access control is managing who has access to physical locations. Methods used include locks, ID badges, and man traps. An ACL is a list that is associated with a file, directory, or object that lists who has access to it and what access they have. ACLs are created by the owner of the object. On the slide, you will see the ACL for a file named Tev. There are three objects that have access to the file: System, Michelle, and administrators. System and administrators are group accounts. Note the icon. Michelle is a user account. The ACL shows the permissions or access that system has to the file. The checks indicate which permissions the object has. All users that are a part of a group will inherit the permissions that are given to that group. Access control is easier to administer through groups than individual user accounts. For each account that is created, there are properties associated with that account. Username, first name, last name, phone number, etc. would be properties. Other properties control how the account functions. One restriction that can be put on an account is account expiration. This automatically disables an account at a given date. This would be a good thing to do if you know you are creating an account for a temporary worker. If the worker is only going to be employed for 3 months, chances are that you might forget at the end of the 3 months to disable their account. This would be a security vulnerability because that employee could still access resources even though they were no longer employed by the company. If you were to go ahead and set up an expiration date 3 months in the future when you create the account, you don't have to worry about disabling the account. You may also want to set restrictions on what time of day a user can log in and where they can log in from, if applicable for your system. If business hours are from 8 to 5 p.m., there is no need for a user to be logging in at 9 p.m. Who's usually at a company after hours? Janitorial staff. We want to make sure that they are not able to get into the system. The graphic on the slide shows the time restrictions that can be put on an account as part of the parental controls in Windows 7. Some systems will allow you to limit the address, IP, MAC, that a user can log in from. This way, someone cannot be on a system in a corner of a room logging in. A user can only log in from their machine. This limits someone from illegally accessing the system. Remember from earlier in the presentation, authentication is something you know, something you have, or something you are. A password is a type of authentication. It's something you know. Passwords are the most common used method for accessing a system. Ideally, it is a combination of letters, numbers, and special characters. It should contain upper and lowercase characters. The more characters you have in your password, the harder it will be for the password to be compromised. Passwords should be changed on a regular basis. Passwords should never be written down. They should never be a word that can be found in a dictionary, a word spelled backwards, common misspellings, or abbreviations. This includes English words and words in other languages. You should also never substitute letters with numbers, for example, a 0 for an O, a 3 for an E. Passwords should never contain personal information like birth date, pet, children's name, favorite team, etc. This is information that people can learn from you. Hackers may try to use social engineering, pretending to be your friend, to find out that this information so they can access your account. One-time passwords, OTP, are passwords that change frequently. Users have a token that is synchronized with an authentication server. When a user wants to access a system, it obtains the password from the token. The password must match the one on the authentication server in order for the user to have access. The primary element in securing physical access is location, location, location. Servers and connectivity devices like routers, switches, and firewalls should be in a place that is not easily accessed. We commonly refer to the rooms that house these devices as server or telecommunications rooms. These rooms should have limited access and have at least one of the following physical access control methods. One way of controlling access to physical locations is to lock the door. Doors can be secured with a key in the knob lock or a deadbolt. These locks require a user to have a key. A cipher lock can also be used. A cipher lock requires a user to know the code. Code should be changed frequently, and especially after an employee leaves. RFID or radio frequency ID cards or badges are being used more frequently. These cards have an RFID that transmits a radio signal to the receiver. A database is checked to make sure the user can have access to the location. RFID access and electronic cipher locks are able to keep a record of the people who have accessed the physical location. Some physical locations may have video surveillance that records anyone coming and going into a location. There are still locations that have access logs that require a person to sign in and out of a location. Man traps are an area between two locked doors that is used to connect an unsecure area from a secure area. You may have seen this portrayed in movies or TV in jails. Biometrics are something a user is. Typical biometrics are fingerprints, faces, hands, irises, or retinas. These are scanned by a system and compared to the image on file. If they match, the user is authenticated and granted the appropriate access. Another type of biometrics is behavioral biometrics. An example is looking at how a person types. The system measures the amount of time a user dwells on a key and the time it takes them to move between keys. This behavior is compared to the stored behavior. If it matches, the user is given access. Another behavioral biometric is someone's voice. The system listens to the way that a user says a particular phrase. A new form of biometrics is cognitive biometrics. This type of biometrics looks at how a user responds to a situation or their thought process. Layering is a best practice for authentication. This requires users to have multiple authentications to have access. The authentications should be of different types. For example, in order to have access to a secure area, they would have to have a key to unlock the door and then enter into a man trap. To get into the second locked door, they must know the code for the cipher lock and have a fingerprint scan. In this scenario, they are required to have something, key, know something, code, and be something, fingerprint. There are also systems that only require a user to log in once, and then they are able to access other resources. Their authentication credentials are passed between systems. Microsoft's Windows Live ID is an example of single sign-on. You sign in once, and you can access your email, Messenger, Xbox Live, and other Microsoft services. Virtual private networks, VPNs, use internet technology to transmit data between sites. The data is encrypted as it travels from site to site. This data is kept separate from the other data traveling on the internet. Think of it as an HOV, or high occupancy vehicle, laying on a four-lane highway. Security policies are a collection of policies that lay out specific rules and requirements that must be followed in order to provide a secure environment. Some common security policies are acceptable use policy, AUP, password policy, and ethics policy. An AUP would lay out what a user can and cannot do on a computer system.